You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
David Sampson, John Skipper, thank you for coming on. Again, as always, on The Sporting Class. Rich guy OnlyFans, as I like to say.
I feel like we'd earn more money if we were actually an OnlyFans account. And I have shoes on.
I'm pretty sure I'm not getting paid for this show. So,
I think you're paying.
I'm not paying myself.
We're currently paying David to not show his feet on camera, actually, specifically. Before we get into what we're here to talk about today, I want to point out, in the world of sports business, on Pablo Torre Finds Out this week, we have a giant story I'm very proud of. It's an investigation by a company called Hunter Brook Media. We interviewed the reporter on that story, into Matt Ishbia, into the Phoenix Suns, Isaiah Thomas. All that stuff is over there. It's a bit of a live story. We'll cover it, revisit it as the days and weeks come. But I want to get into what we are safely able to say today, because there is news that is, I think, underrated when it comes to its influence on sports and the sports business economy. Because this Disney investor shareholder meeting fight, there's an activist investor named Nelson Peltz, an activist shareholder, David Sampson. And what is at stake here? What has been resolved that we can say as we cover this story endlessly, the future of sports rights?
It's a proxy battle. And the reason why it's interesting is, of course, ESPN is owned by Disney. And Disney is a large company that has a board of directors. And when you invest enough money into a company, you feel like you want a say in how it's operated. And so there are hedge funds that take positions in companies. There's individuals sometimes who take positions. Nelson Peltz is an individual who loves buying big chunks of companies and then telling them how to do their job better by saying, I'll do it better. I want to get on the board of directors and I want to influence the future of this company. And Nelson Peltz did it with Disney. And ESPN was really his focus, thinking that we can do better here with ESPN, whether it's to spin it off or whether it's to spin off the streaming network. We need Disney shares to perform better. And what activist shareholders do is they buy shares and they want those share prices to go up, and they don't care about sports or...
Well, in fact, you know more about this than I do. The Peltz went into this with the intention of accumulating shares, creating some level of what he would call activism, but what other people would call interference in the running of the Walt Disney Company. And he's doing it for the sole purpose of hoping that investors will believe him, drive the shares up, and he'll make money and sell. I think what it means from yesterday. What it means from yesterday doesn't mean anything. I never thought this guy had a shot at doing this. Generally, the overwhelming share of the institutional investors in Disney and all the mom and pop guy folks who own Disney because they have beloved feelings about it are going to support Bob Iger. He's consistently delivered with an exception of a very difficult 2022, and I don't think this is part of the continuing discussion about should they sell ESPN. Consistently said there's no reason to sell ESPN. Still puts off a lot of cash. Sports is still very important. Why would you abandon that? This is, I think, an affirmation that the majority of people think that the way Disney is running this is the right way to go.
I've heard you toe the corporate line before, but this may be an all-timer, because you are absolutely having total disregard to share price and the valuation, and the fact that under Iger, in the second time around, remember, he took over after leaving because he wasn't happy with who he put in as his own successor. And now he's been back. The shares have not performed. This year, they're better. They certainly are performing this year. But you act as though what Nelson Peltz is doing, and he's no saint. He is the original Richard Gere from Pretty Woman. That's what he does without having ever met Julia Roberts. He buys stuff and wants to tear it apart to see if the parts are more than the whole. Or he'll buy parts of a company trying to get more of the company to get the shares up, of course, to make money.
Yes.
That's your summary of Pretty Woman's plot?
I think so. Isn't that what Pretty Woman is about?
I can't quite recollect, and I also think that's probably territory I'm not headed into at all. Because we're no longer in the days when I think it can be funny that you...
I just am fascinated as to how David Samson sees, of course, activist investing in the plot of Pretty Woman. But I digress, John. Excuse me.
That was much more entertaining than anything I have to add at this point.
No, I think what you added was exceptionally telling to me, because Bob Iger, who is the CEO of Disney, he doesn't want shareholders getting up in his business. No chairman does. No president does. However, in a public company, there are activists. Nelson Peltz has done this before with other companies, which aren't being run as efficiently as he would like.
Right. Now, I would say there are two things, right? One is that, of course, it's appropriate in many cases for there to be activist shareholders, because many companies have a better alternative and have been improved by that. In this case, I think what Nelson Peltz was suggesting would not have made Disney more valuable. I think it potentially could have driven the stock up briefly, but I don't really think so. I think that I have no problem with activism. I think in this case he was wrong, and the shareholders were correct in affirming that Disney is doing what they need to do, but they clearly still have some things to work through.
It's a big win for Bob Iger. Let's make no mistake
and
about
it. And for ESPN.
So that's the interesting thing that I'm thinking about.
Mark.
Where is Jimmy Pitaro in this? So when these activist shareholders, when these proxy battles happen, you have to choose a horse. Now, Jimmy Pitaro could have chosen the Nelson Peltz horse. He didn't, but he could have. And it's what happens in the baseball world, in the corporate world, in every company.
What happens at co-op boards.
Exactly right. And so, Jimmy, there has to be a succession plan for Bob, which is what Nelson Peltz had really been talking about that he was concerned with.
Well, and Nelson brings with him Jay Rasulo, who was the former CFO, ran the parks at one point, and was a candidate for the CEO job and didn't get it. So he's, I assume, bringing along, you'll understand this better than I do today, he's bringing along the CEO he would probably install. You're asking the question of, gee, Jimmy theoretically could have done the same thing. I don't generally like to comment much on the people who are at my former employer, just out of respect, but it is Jimmy Pitaro's character would never allow him to do an uprising against Bob Iger. He is, you know, he's in the inner circle there. He and Bob are tight, and it's not within reach. He could not have done that.
So I used to work at a place called Morgan Stanley, and there was an inner circle. And the inner circle was super tight until the succession plan became clear. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the inner circle was not as tight, because people left who lost. If there's three people as a candidate to succeed, generally what happens is the losers in that fight to be CEO do not stay.
Yeah. You have not seen, though, any of the folks other now than Jay Rasulo who have lost in this. They've not caused issues. They've left.
But that's the same thing.
But
hasn't won yet, and he hasn't lost. He still could be a candidate in the succession.
I think Bob has a very tight inner circle, and I would be surprised if anybody currently employed by the company did anything close to that.
Can I just frame this around just how much this mattered, though, in terms of the financial outlay to win an election like this? How would you estimate that, David, the cost of this?
It was reported that about $70 million was spent, and there were ads on podcasts that you told me about.
I was listening to The Town, The Ringer podcast, and they played an ad about keeping the incumbent shareholder slate, board slate intact.
It was a presidential campaign, and in the year that we have a presidential campaign, and I've spent a lot of time, a little bit off the subject, but I'd love to mention
this. No, I want to know your insight into...
I love the concept of campaign financing, and I spoke to, and it's not a look at me, Louis, but there was an old senator. His name was Kent Conrad. Kent Conrad...
One of the Dakotas. North
Dakota. And brilliant man.
I'm so proud of that poll, by the way. you just winked at me.
Amazing. I thought it was more a twitch, but okay. And he always wanted to run a baseball team. And so we switched jobs for a day, and I was senator for a day, and he was president of the Marlins for a day.
That is a nightmare on various levels.
My goodness, I'm only hoping there were no close votes in the Senate.
I learned about, because he was very much in favor of curbing campaign financing, because that leads to a lot of issues. And I was thinking about it, that the reason why incumbents like it is because they don't want to limit. Incumbents want there to be no limits on what you can spend, because generally incumbents benefit from it. And so Bob Iger spent a tremendous amount of money as the incumbent
to keep power.
To keep power. Nelson Peltz spent money like Ross Perot style in an effort to, that's an old reference maybe that will be lost on our audience.
I'm old enough to get it, unfortunately.
Okay, then I feel better
about
it.
Admiral Stockdale's a running mate.
It's tens of millions of dollars that Nelson Peltz will spend trying to get people to vote with him. Because what a proxy battle is, it literally is counting votes. If you own a share of stock, you get a vote. And so, like our elections, very few people voted.
And that's how
Bob Iger, the incumbent, ends up winning.
As well as my co-op board at home. Yeah. Similar dynamic.
Maybe take it back to sports, because what it does mean is that ESPN likely remains part of the Walt Disney Company, one of the groups of people who I think should be happy that this proxy fight didn't succeed are the rights holders, right? Because this means ESPN is still going to be right there as part of the company.
A buyer in the marketplace.
Yeah, a buyer in the marketplace.
I still think we have to watch. Mm-hmm. Because Bob Iger, while he's gotten a directive from the shareholders that he's going to stay in power, I think it's clear to him, when you look at the past, and there have been many unsuccessful runs by Nelson Peltz at Iger, he's sort of done the Heisman to all of them, but he needs to do something differently. Yeah. And I think he recognizes that. And ESPN, while you say it's never would be in play, I think that there's a scenario where it is in play.
Yeah, my tendency is to think that ESPN stays there. They've been active. They just renewed the men's college playoff championship, which, by the way, is sort of like winning a bet on a horse when it's like 5/8 of the way through. They won when it was 5/8. Now they've won when it's 6/8. I still hear people talking about 12 teams, 14 teams, 16. I'm not sure if they know what they've won yet, but they appear to have won the championship.
So I was not aware. You think they bought the rights to no matter what the CFP is?
No, I don't know that we need to get in here.
I think a specific number of games is what they got. And I think that college football gets to go after other rights holders, though ESPN, of course, would bid if there were more.
No, I don't
games.
Believe that. I believe they bought it exclusively.
So they get every game, no matter how many games?
That would be my without assumption.
Without having to pay more.
I can't tell you that. I know I've read that exact thing, but I don't know why. That's what I would have done. You would buy the whole thing. You want to be the home, and they are the home of college football. So there's been a big dent in that when the Big Ten ended up in the hands of Fox.
Yep.
So, but we could talk.
I want to just put a button on this by pointing out that Nelson Peltz, this activist shareholder who tried to mount this revolution, is he just out of the picture now? I mean, David, you have,
no.
I believe you have an even more egregious look at me, Louie, here that I'm just waiting for you to drop, because Nelson Peltz is character.
It's funny, though.
Well, I just want to know, what do you think he does next?
I grew up in Nelson Peltz's apartment.
Was he there while you were growing
no.
up?
No. Thankfully, he
did. He know?
Wait, was that the problem?
Certainly wasn't the solution.
Rich guy only fan.
I keep getting confused with Norman Fell. Remember Norman Fell?
From Three's Company, Mr. Roper?
Yeah.
Now I'm out on the references.
So whenever I think Nelson Peltz, I see Norman Fell's face.
Nelson Peltz happens to be has an amazing art collection. And he lived in an apartment on the Upper East Side that was bought by my mother and stepfather. And I went to high school with Nelson's a Horace Manor, and his kids were Horace Manors. And I was in class with his daughter, Brooke Peltz, who was 1 year older. And he always had this reputation. He was the father in the class who was this titan, but he's grown into a far more Murdoch type later in life. But he left little things in the apartment that we found for years after.
What does that mean?
So
Little paintings? I have this visual picture of little David Sampson swinging as a two-year-old underneath Monet's lilies.
Right. The most expensive bassinet.
No, I was seven.
Seven?
And they were Degas.
Right. Two.
So out of the bassinet by seven?
It was Picasso, not Monet.
Okay.
It's okay for Nelson Peltz to love art. It's okay that Nelson Peltz lost, but your question is a good one. He still owns all the shares.
So is this a recurring concern?
100%. Okay. That's why, to me, Bob Iger is not done worrying about it. Because Nelson Peltz didn't, when he lost the proxy battle, he doesn't have to sell his shares. Bob Iger wants him to divest and sell to someone else, but it doesn't mean Nelson Peltz will.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move on to what ESPN is doing this weekend, which is broadcasting a women's tournament that has hit records that are just unprecedented for women's college basketball and arguably for women's sports in general, because the rating that just came out this week for the number of people who watched LSU versus Iowa was 12.3 million. And John, I just want to, again, as the former president of ESPN, just a sense of how eye-opening this number was for you.
This is an astonishing number. I mean, this number is bigger than NFL games on Amazon this year, on the Thursday night games. And by the way, when we had the poor Monday night football schedule, we had games on Monday night in this range. The fact that a women's college basketball regional final
in Elite Eight
would attract 12.3 million viewers is spectacular. I mean, it's an enormous increase. ESPN has to be thrilled. They've got a great tournament coming up this weekend. As long as Caitlin Clark, you got South Carolina, you got UConn, and NC State. As a Tar Heel, it is painful to see the Wolfpack in both tournaments. But back to the ratings, it's enormous, and I think they will do very, very well this weekend. And they're up in the range of big-time men's sports championships ratings. This is a bigger rating. I don't know, David, wouldn't you like to get a 12.3 million viewers to a wild card game in baseball?
It's a nightmare for Major League Baseball and the NBA. It outdrew every NBA game except for last year's deciding game five. It outdrew every World Series game. It's a total nightmare.
From the perspective of people
in the leagues. If you own a team in basketball or baseball and you see this number for college basketball, women's college basketball, you're despondent. And you will publicly say that everything's great and you love the fact and gender equality and all these things. There are meetings happening right now trying to make sure. And Adam Silver, Rob Manfred, believe me, he doesn't want his NBA finals outrated by college basketball.
Look, this is a spectacular event. You had Angel Reese, you had Caitlin Clark.
One of the greatest games I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't think personally, but you know the owners better than I do. I do know the commissioners, that you and I both know them. I don't think that Adam is bemoaning or Rob is bemoaning today, oh my gosh, this is a disaster. I think
disasters. Because it's not put. They don't want to be there on every news show this week with everybody saying the same thing, which is this game outdrew the NBA finals.
And also,
and
drew
the
in fairness,
MLB
every
World
college football game last season outside of the playoff and OSU Michigan and the SEC championship.
It's a phenomenon we should celebrate. And by the way, it's not a zero sum game. Well, I'm assuming you're
that's
getting
how David
lots
clearly
and
sees
lots
it.
Of
I do, we all
new viewers way. In. I mean, if you go see, if you look at the crowd. Pablo, I think you were at the LSU.
I was.
What do you mean you think? Everyone in the world knows he was there.
It's full. It's full of young girls who adore Caitlin Clark. You've got new fans coming into sports. I think this is a thing. There's no reason to do anything except celebrate this, including more people watching more sports is good for all the primary sports.
Well,
I would be more worried if I was a secondary or tertiary sport. People only have so much time to spend. If they want to spend it watching baseball games, they're not going to not watch baseball games because they're watching women's college basketball games. I think this is a great phenomenon, and I think we'll have big numbers this week. I'm not sure anything will beat 12-3.
That was my next question, was does this feel like the highest watermark, which will remain as such, a peak, or is this what?
Caitlin Clark has to be in the final for there to be a chance to beat that. If she's in the final, they could do 15 to 20 million viewers. Mm.
So one of the things that I was thinking about is hopefully this is it. Again, I'm putting my league hat on, and I'm a little not, I don't agree with you, John, from my standpoint, where I didn't say it was a disaster, but it's just a talking point that we don't want any part of when we're involved in leagues. You don't want the talking
despondent,
point.
Despondent, I believe, was the adjective.
Beyond used. Repair. And so Caitlin Clark, that's the only hope here, is that she's the phenomenon, not that women's college basketball
is. If you're rooting
is.
For your self-preservation in the hierarchy of
correct,
sports
which
ratings.
Is what they are all doing. But I wanted to think about the business side of this and we're celebrating the 12.3. So when negotiations come up and you're a rights holder and you're bidding for the women's tournament or for Iowa basketball or big 15 or big 17 coverage, the existence of Caitlin Clark, who then goes to Indiana.
Let's pretend, number one overall pick in the draft, the Fever.
Which I believe she'll go number one. I think the Fever have already announced it. They're already selling jerseys. Are you believing that this is a increase in the value of women's college sports? Or are you saying this is a one-off and I will not compensate you for the number that was achieved?
Well, clearly, if you're the rights holder, you're going to suggest that this is the new bar. If you're negotiating with the rights holder, you can suggest, well, you're not going to have any credibility to say this is a phenomenon and this is going to fall right back down and next year the WNBA ratings will be the same as they were. This is going to lift things. So the person selling the WNBA rights is in a better position to get more money, and there'll be a little back and forth about how much, but you're not going to get, you're not going to have any effectiveness trying to suggest to the WNBA, oh, Caitlin Clark's not going to matter. The women's sports is not itself overall going up. It is. They're going to, and by the way, ESPN just did the deal to renew all of the NCAA, and the jewel within that deal, though there are other, very other good stones in there as well, but the jewel is the women's basketball tournament. Mm. They just bought that for what I think was reported for $56 million of what they paid. That's a great buy. I think the women
included a lot of sports, but it didn't include the main ones. It was not football. It was not basketball.
No, it was over $100 million. Maybe somebody can get it. I recollect something, 110, 112, 100, and that 56 or 60 of that was attributed to women's basketball.
So this is what Charlie Baker said, president of the NCAA. They valued the women's basketball rights specifically at around $65 million annually, or roughly 56%, as John said, of the media rights portion of this deal.
And by the way, at this point, they're high-fiving and going, we got a great deal, because this is a, I don't remember how long it was, how many years it was.
This is an eight-year agreement, $920 million for the exclusive rights to 40 championships, including the crown jewel, as John said.
So in the ninth year of that, it was eight-year deal?
Eight-year deal.
Eight-year deal. The eighth year of that deal, $65 million, and it's an average annual, so it's not exactly the same every year, but that's going to look like a spectacular buy. I think this is going to become a phenomenon a year after year from now on.
So that's a wait to see. Where my head is, if they don't bifurcate WNBA and NBA rights, then the WNBA is exactly where it was. It's pretty much that simple for me. And I don't think that Adam Silver will do it, but he either will or won't. We're going to find out.
Hey, it's Mike Ryan. I've been watching sports for a long time now. As an adult, a lot has changed. A lot has changed since I turned 21 in the world, but once I was able to enjoy sports with the wonderful taste of Miller Lite, I knew that there was no topping this. I mean, I think back then, instant replay was barely used in other sports outside of football. So when I wanted to complain about referees, I would get all mad, and then I would take a sip of that Miller Lite, cool myself down, take a beat, and realize there are more important things, like the great taste of Miller Lite. Less filling, and only 96 calories, the original light beer since 1975. You remember all those old John Madden ads? I still view them on YouTube occasionally. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time! To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard.
David Sampson, weirdo. Because he was not the fun substitute teacher who'd wheel out a TV and play a VHS tape of Armageddon in science class. He was the weird one who would eat an egg salad sandwich while clipping his toenails into the trash can and ranting about Ronald Reagan.
Stugatz.
The guy kept talking about how his ass was smooth. Smoother than a newborn's cheek. He wouldn't stop bragging about his bare buttocks to me.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
The fact that when you get the WNBA, you...
When you get the NBA, you get... It's like ESPN Ocho.
I'm not sure whether I've seen any reporting on whether they are separating the right sales or not.
We're going to find out. Because that's what I'm saying. They have not been so far.
In the last deal, they were not. The last deal was a package deal.
because the value was the NBA.
No, there was value in both leagues. I'm not going to give you that.
I know you're
and
not.
And by the way, give me
another reason why you wouldn't split them up. What is the reason why you bundle assets?
We paid real money for the WNBA the previous deal, and we knew that the value was greater in the next deal. And I certainly cannot reveal any of the valuations we did or what we talked about with the league, but the league valued them as well, and they got a nice increase.
Why can't you? You're a Meadowlark now. Can you give us an idea of what...
It was not my decision whether to buy them separately or together. They were, at that time, packaged together.
So you're Adam Silver right now. Are you thinking women's sports is at a place? This is where my head is regarding this story and these ratings, because people talk about the ratings as though this is the moment for women's sports. And I think those moments get manifested through monetization. And there's an opportunity for that monetization coming up.
Yeah, and I can't tell you that I have any familiarity with what's going to happen. In fact, in the last one, it may have been only ESPN that bought it as a package, because the other TNT did not buy the WNBA rights. So they bought only NBA rights last time.
It wasn't granted up. And so there's some question, as you recall, whether there was a desire to have it.
Correct. We wanted it. So we may have wanted it enough to buy it exclusively. I don't think TNT at the time wanted to buy.
Well, you're in different businesses.
Yes.
You need sports.
Yes, and we were also committed to doing women's sports. And there's no, while I know you will laugh and suggest,
I'm just
was
smiling.
It good business or not? We believed in it. We believed it was coming. And by the way, everything we spent is going to be confirmed that it was smart by this college women's basketball deal. We invested in that, and that is why ESPN still retains the premier position, you know, for holding women's sports rights.
Yeah, what's fascinating to me here is that this went from a thing that I think rightfully, David, look, you're not alone in suggesting that there was almost a, when it comes to the business, the cold hard capitalism of it, there was a benefit to the WNBA hiding inside of the NBA deal, as opposed to having to subsist on its own. And now what we're seeing is this is not a nonprofit. There's always this sense of like the WNBA, women's college basketball, you care about it because that's what socially conscious people should do. And now what we're seeing is, oh, people are watching this because they actually want to watch this thing. And that to me is, look, when I was growing up, I did not expect 12.3 million people watch a game like this. It's just mind-blowing on that level.
How many women's games have you watched tip to tap this season?
This season?
I mean, total.
In the tournament, probably like a dozen?
Oh, so that would put you on one end of the spectrum, I would think. That's a lot.
I went to this game in person because I enjoy this.
Give me a break, would you?
Are we good?
No, it's burning up inside me that you want people to think that
the rich
you
guy only fans is
well,
you guys, not
no,
me.
No,
you guys, all not evidence me. To the contrary.
This is kind of not hard to believe. There's always an event that everybody secretly wants to be at, right? And it is an amazing fact that event on this night when LSU played Iowa, that was the event that every sports fan would actually have liked to have been at. And that is a remarkable thing. May I use this to slightly comment upon the Kent Babb story?
Oh, sure.
So
Kim Mulkey, of course, had complained. We covered this before, John. You had taken interest in Kim Mulkey, head coach of LSU, preemptively attacking the Washington Post and its reporter Kent Babb about a piece, an investigative piece seemingly that was about to come out.
And we talked about that last time, and it came out as expected. It actually was quite a insightful, powerful 7,000-word look at the Kim Mulkey way. And it was pretty balanced, I thought. It did acknowledge her success. It acknowledged the loyalty of many of the players for her. It acknowledged her drive, her determination. I thought there was much to admire. She, I believe, objected to Kent contacting her family members. But of course, that's de rigueur. If you're going to do something that gives you insight into a person, you need to understand where they came from, if you can, who their parents were, and that happened. So I just would tell you, if you want to do some reading after this wonderful LSU-Iowa game. You can read Kent Babb's story in the Washington Post, quite good. And then Wright Thompson has another masterpiece on ESPN.com about Caitlin Clark. That is, if you want to understand Caitlin Clark and the phenomenon, where she came from, Wright spent an entire year doing this story. And again, it's worth a read to really understand the athlete who right now, for a moment, and we should celebrate this, and I know
I hate Caitlin Clark guy.
No, I didn't never suggested that, but it is a wonderful moment where this reminds me of the 99ers, right, when the women's soccer team captured the imagination of the American public.
And had a domino effect that lasted beyond just the blip of, wow, what a detention grabbing.
What caused that? Was that the Brandy... Take my shirt off.
Well,
was that
of
the beginning,
course,
or was that the end?
That was at the end.
That was the end.
So people tuned in. That game had just short of 30 million viewers. So that is an astonishing number. That is still, I believe, the largest audience for a soccer game, men's or women's, in the United States. And by the way, you had the same thing happen with women's soccer that is now happening with women's basketball. Everybody thought the 99ers was going to mean that the Women's Soccer League was an immediate success. It wasn't. They've been struggling with this for about 10 years, but finally, it is starting to take off. The NWSL, we'll see, and I have no personal interest in the NWSL financially or as a broadcaster, but you will see it doing very well this year, I think.
Well, they had to clean up about 1,000 forest fires of abuse and major issues within that league. So there was nowhere to go but up. It was either going to fold or get better.
Well, I think
the road it was on
it did fold twice.
Was not
so
good.
This is the third incarnation. And of course, the perpetrators in most of those abuse scandals were not women.
I didn't like the Kent Babb story. I'll go on record saying that because when Kim Mulkey had her press conference saying that she hired the greatest defamation firm of all time, I thought there was going to be this amazing article about stuff that would blow my socks off. I didn't learn anything.
Well,
so it's a big nothing burger.
You learned some things, just not the things that would have...
Yeah, I learned normal things. Yeah. She drives her kids hard, tough coach, Bobby Knight style,
but
may have a problem with...
You see Geraldo's vault here.
That's exactly
what
I saw. Is that ancient?
It is now.
I'm sorry.
But because there was a promise of this is a takedown.
By her herself.
And it wasn't that, which is both, I think, a credit to the reporter and to David, a massive disappointment.
Yes.
Because the expectation was far higher.
You're looking for a little fight.
I wanted something. I wanted there to be some sort of lawsuit. I wanted her to stand up. I wanted there to be an epiphany of some sort. It turns out she's just a tough-minded, old-school, difficult-to-deal-with, successful coach.
Yeah, I wouldn't... I would put it slightly differently.
Yes.
But you did learn why she's that way. You learned about her relationship with her father, Les, who left. You understand why she may have some initial distrust of people she doesn't know because she felt abandoned.
Daddy issues?
Look, I thought he did a good job. I didn't know that. I'm assuming...
I didn't know that, but it's funny. I mean,
Whoops Among
find,
Us does not have
right,
daddy
so
issues.
It doesn't interest
the idea that
Reed.
David is somehow...
not impressed.
We all own our daddy issues,
exactly.
David, please. Come
no,
on.
That's the point.
Exactly.
So that's why it's not...
I think it's possible Nelson Peltz was a little father figure for David.
No. Jeffrey Luria, Nelson Peltz mental image here.
In the house,
he felt
the paternal spirit.
Ghostly presence.
He felt the paternal spirit of a man willing to take on the mighty Mickey Empire.
Beneath the painting of Saturn eating his child, I believe, would be the...
It was probably a hopper.
Very good. Very good.
One, got a hopper and a skipper.
One, before we hop and skip and jump out of here, I do want to ask the question, though, about, and Coco helpfully has highlighted this, the idea that all of the ratings are up, right? Like, so I want to just contextualize this because, of course, there is a clear spike historically for this game, and that is real, as discussed. But Michael Mulvihill, who's the guy at Fox who does the rating stuff over there, he points out that this has been the most watched college football regular season ever, the most watched college basketball regular season ever, the most watched March Madness ever, easily, through the Elite Eight, men and women combined. And so why is this the accounting thing that we've discussed before, David, which I need you to remind people of? What's happening here, dude?
So remember, the way they're doing it, it used to be the old Nielsen box, which no one ever knew what it was. It was actually, sometimes they'd call people. Other times they'd have to click, like keep a diary of what they were watching. And all executives around sports would be dying waiting for the weekly Nielsen ratings that were a bunch of people we could never identify other than their Nielsen families. And we felt like there was science to it when we were on top of the leaderboard, and we thought that it was absolute horse hockey when we were not. Now, they're counting it in totally different ways. And we covered this, actually, some of the fighting that went on over how to count who's watching. But they're counting people who are now, they're estimating bars out of home viewers, which to me is a great thing to count, but very hard to do.
There is a shared interest in the people who measure the audiences with the people they measure them for. The big broadcast networks do not want the numbers to go down, and they have consistently looked for ways to plausibly, not definitively, not exactly, figure out how they could bring bigger numbers to the advertisers, who in fact want them as well, because they want to make 15 and 30 second commercials still, and that's still what this is mostly measuring, because they make a lot of money on that, as opposed to a return on investment little digital ad that shows up because you and I spoke about something and our phone heard and sold it to us. So they have smartly found ways to grow the audience. I don't believe suddenly there are vast numbers. I don't believe it's exact. As David pointed out, it's always been a sample.
We always assume that it's real,
and
but
sampling.
So we keep saying that 12.3 million people watched Pablo with Ted Lasso Monday night. We don't know that it was 12.3 million. I just want to make sure that our audience understands that. That's not the actual number of people who watch the game.
It is the number by which companies pay marketing agencies who pay the broadcast networks. Yes. All who have a shared interest in figuring out ways that they can plausibly claim a bigger audience, but it's still a sample. It is, however, somewhat consistent, by which I mean something that did 10, something that did 12, 3, something that did 15. The ordering is probably right. The proportion is probably right, but they're probably all counting people who walked into a bar, ordered a beer, and walked out. And that counted as a viewer.
And I don't know how you'd count that person. So you mentioned a train of people who benefit from ratings, and it's an interesting thing to think about, because what you're talking about with marketing and marketing budgets and buying ads, and then you sort of glossed over the ad that comes to you digitally. I spend more money, as I sit here today, with ads that are pushed to me.
What have you bought, David?
Podcasts.
What have you bought?
Toiletry kits, blankets, luggage, chargers. You name it.
Sounds like you're going somewhere. I'm going to send you some travel ads.
but it's target ads, and it's what every company wants. Yeah. They want targeted ads.
They do. There is a problem, because while there's that shared interest there, in the new world, you've got a couple of problems. One is the tech companies can measure exactly. They can.
Which is scary for everyone.
On the other hand, they do not make it possible for any third party to accurately audit that or count
proprietary.
That. So now you still have a funny problem. The marketers and the companies and the marketers are dependent upon them to tell the truth. And of course, we of course would believe that too, and understand that they would exactly tell you exactly how many. And that's why you hear these weird metrics. Oh, 300 million minutes is how much such and such has been consumed. I'm like, well, what good does that do me? Why do I need to know? Yep. Yeah, it's not apples to apples. They will not lie, but they will use the data in the way most favorable to them. Magazine business, they used to count cards. They'd show you a card. Have you read Rolling Stone magazine before? You'd say yes. They'd go, oh, reader. And then they would do a big survey that said Rolling Stone magazine has 1 million people who buy the magazine, but 8 pass-along readers. So their total audience is 8 million. The advertiser would pay for 8 million. Did 8 million people read that magazine? Very unlikely.
I would assume then Playboy would be the number one because it was in every barbershop and it was passed along to everybody always.
Well, so Playboy, actually, in those days, they measured it by counting the number of fingerprints.
That's what they did. Thank you. I want to go full circle.
I don't want to know anything else about David Sampson's barbershop.
Thank you. With little Matt Ishbia, and one of the parts of that story was the Super Bowl ad.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about how a company would defend spending $5.5 million on an ad, and we watched the Super Bowl, and now the ads have QR codes, and there's all sorts of things going on with Super Bowl ads. And Ishbia's ad specifically was about brokers and about the very thing that Sam Pavlatori finds out. And how do you measure? How does a company who buys a Super Bowl ad measure? Are they doing it for branding or for sales? And what happens is you tell your CEO it's branding because you can't back it up with meaningful direct sales from
Overwhelmingly branding. Now, that UWM ad did have a mechanism where you could respond. So they may have some ability to measure effectiveness.
Right, go to this website. All this explained in the episode.
But almost none of the advertising on the Super Bowl. All the advertising on the Super Bowl is brand halo, sort of uncountable benefit. They can tell you which ads people like. They can't tell you how many Buicks they went down and bought because they saw an ad.
But this is fascinating, and it's an enormous topic. We don't have time for all of it, but it's the idea of advertising as a premise of, like, what is the return on this investment? In the Super Bowl, it's easy because you say, we're in the club of people with a Super Bowl commercial. But in reality, how many products did you move has always been...
It's always been the issue. There's a very famous ad guy, and I can't remember which one it was, who said, I know that 50% of my money is wasted. I just can't figure out which 50%. And that's because of the uncertainty of the measurement. And that was also because if his target was men 25 to 54, he gets some data that suggests that this he was reaching, 36% of the people he was reaching was those. Now they do have exact data.
That's the promise of the tech that David has
been. We're a victim of that. Yes. So the victim is this, that as part of MetaLark, we all do reads. I don't know if Pavlatori is forced to do it in his show because his show.
I gladly do.
Do you? So we have codes, you know, Lebatard 50 or Samson 25 for some advertisers who advertise with MetaLark. And I always think about the number of people who actually put in that code is always going to be fewer than the number of people who would have some brand awareness that they're a sponsor of MetaLark shows. But the way it's measured now is by who actually puts that code in that we all read.
You go to J. Crew, you buy a pair of pants. Did anybody help you with this? And you can name Ted in the back or, no, I don't remember, no.
And then it's a major thing if you name Ted.
Of course, because that is how you get credit for sending business in one direction.
You know, whenever I get asked on the way out, if somebody's helped me, I put David Sampson.
Why?
At random retail stores.
It's funny. I do the exact opposite. I say, I don't know David Sampson. No connection.
Best friends? Really? Barely friends.
I think of people all throughout New York City going, he said David Sampson helped him. That guy who does nothing personal?
You knew the name of the show.
Yeah.
That's
so positive. All the people in retail outlets in New York.
That's right. All the people who sell David Sampson his toiletries are raving about nothing personal. I want to get, though, to another set of friends. Okay, this is Alex Rodriguez. This is Mark Lorry.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the team, the duo that was supposed to buy the Minnesota Timberwolves. We got 10 minutes to do this, so we'll be a little expedient. But there's a lot here, right? It's about a majority owner in Glenn Taylor, who finally was supposed to exit stage left. And yet here remains the majority owner because what happened, David, with this?
He's an octogenarian with no heirs.
Glenn Taylor.
Just so we can be clear that this is... He could sell it into a foundation. He doesn't really want to die with it. It just becomes complicated. So it makes perfect
sense. Not to him, of course.
Well, he'll be dead.
At that point, pretty
simple
for him.
You're one of those guys?
Yeah, pretty simple.
Don't worry about that. You worry about it. I'll be dead. I hate those guys.
There's no greater distinction between the two worldviews of these two rich guys than that one.
I'll be dead? I worry
John's out of here.
About,
David is haunting the universe.
I'm just beginning to worry. That's when it gets serious.
Anyway,
so Glenn Taylor is going to sell his team. And he sold it for $1.5 billion in 2021 to Alex Rodriguez, who's always wanted to own a team. Except Alex Rodriguez didn't pay the $1.5 billion back in 21. He was going to pay it in installments. And then he missed some installment payments. And Glenn Taylor was very forgiving over the course of the last few years, no problem. And that deadline got extended because in a contract, there's deadlines. You have to pay by this time. And you've dealt with contracts in your life. If you don't follow the letter of the contract, there are some people you do business with who say, don't worry about it, we're good. And some people will say, hey, you're in violation. I'm canceling the contract. The people who say you're in violation, I'm canceling the contract, are people who don't want to do business with you anymore. Glenn Taylor doesn't want to do business with A-Rod anymore because Glenn Taylor's team is now worth $2.5 billion, not the $1.5 billion that he sold it for in 21.
Just in that span of time. It's
just in that span of time.
What exactly is an octogenarian with no heirs going to do with the extra billion?
It's a great question. Charity, I hope, and I assume. But he can... Listen, he may live to be like Will live to be over 100.
Well, and clearly. And he'd clearly need that extra bill to keep up the lifestyle.
So yeah, the cryogenic chamber gets expensive.
John Skipper's view of owning a team is that he would send it out when he was ready to sell. He'd get bids and sell it to the lowest bidder. That's what somehow. And you'd say, this is the right thing to do.
You could maybe set the test for how you and I are different in that if I were 83, I would not care about an extra billion if I had one already. It wouldn't matter
to
me.
The only people who say that are people who don't have one.
Well, that's true.
So, I mean, I like that
that's
you
true.
Say
wow.
it,
that was
but
a,
it's just
a true rap battle bar by David Sampson.
That's like
that.
In a fencing match. That's just like, I got hit right here. I'm done. I'm done.
I don't mean to say it in that way.
No, it was
because listen, metal arc, half a metal arc.
The
you're getting close.
Was robust.
What's okay. funny about
rich guy only fans? This is what I mean.
What's funny about the fight going on is that A-Rod is trying to say, for the benefit of the fans, Glenn, sell the team because we're really good at owning the team. And look at how good the Timberwolves are this year. They're fighting for the number one seed in the Western Conference. But then A-Rod is going on every show, but not on Metal Arc, strangely enough. But every show, we did the South Beach Sessions with Dan.
We're friendly with Mr. Rodriguez.
Okay, so
Dan presented him with a painting of a centaur. Yes.
Then yes. I'd like him to come on and discuss. He said, we're going to fight whatever it takes, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. We will never stop fighting Glenn Taylor because he went back on his word.
We will meet them on the mountaintops. We will cross the river. There is a speech like that somewhere.
It's not New Rockne.
Is it Churchill?
It's either David Sampson either inside of a tank or atop a horse. Yeah, one of those scenarios.
I like the idea of being on top of a horse, but I can only say whatever. Here's how this ends and why it's interesting to me. Because Adam Silver, I think of everything from the commissioner's standpoint. Adam Silver does not want the Timberwolves to be sold to A-Rod at a $1.5 billion valuation.
Because it's low.
It is far better for him for the Timberwolves to be sold for more. So he is not doing anything to take a position that would favor Alex Rodriguez. He's taking the position of, hey, it didn't close. The Timberwolves are now not for sale. Maybe they'll be for sale again. But what he knows is when they are for sale again, and even if A-Rod is a buyer again, it won't be at the 1.5 number.
No.
And that matters.
Particularly since they have one of the best up-and-coming young players. I have two great young players. So their prospects for the next few years look very good. That's a more like a $2.5 to $3 billion valuation, wouldn't you think?
So that's what I do think.
Yeah.
And that's why.
And I'm still young enough, just to be clear, that $1 billion would still make a difference in my life.
Listen, we're working on behalf of Metal Arc. Us and our 25 basis points are really working hard for
you. Established...
First $1 billion bid we get will be the last.
We've established on this show previously that we will also sell all of our principals for $1 trillion. There's like a escalating, you know, series of what we...
I'm way lower than that.
Yeah, and don't hesitate to call if it's like half a trillion, just to check.
I think that John is making fun of how Metal Arc gets valued, and I take it far more seriously, as I know he does, that we're all doing these shows and doing what we do because we think that this is a billion-dollar company.
I am pretty sure the valuation went up somewhere in the neighborhood of a sawbuck.
How are people going to respect us when you don't respect us?
Well, probably because possibly some of them don't know what a sawbuck is, because I think it's a bit of a
can't be
a,
good.
I think it's a bit of an old school term.
Yeah. Oh God.
After you finish recording, John gets very upset, and he'll text me on the side things like, you know, we're not rich guy only fans.
I've never.
He doesn't
want to
be associated like that.
I've never.
So you got to stop doing that. You keep ruining my weekends, Pablo. Stop.
I feel like people have really enjoyed the very broad appeal references to art that we've made all show today.
Hopper and Skipper.
Yeah, Hopper and Skipper.
So on this A-Rod story, just to put a pin in that one.
It's going to continue, but the fight is.
So these guys, but I want to say, like, this is the fight. Like, they're not allowed in the building. Like, there's, I want to get the.
So Glenn Taylor came out and said that all the things that I was letting you do, A-Rod, because you were going to be the controlling owner, like getting into the clubhouse and going in the back areas, you do not have to let your limited partners do that.
Communicate with team execs anymore.
We did not let our limited partners communicate with anybody. They couldn't call the GM. The GM doesn't want to take a call from a limited partner, and that's what A-Rod is. Limited partners can't walk to the clubhouse or walk behind the scenes to the kitchen area.
What percentage of the club does he own, A-Rod?
He and Mark Laurie have 40%.
I would think you'd let the guys who own 40% come back into the dining room. It's okay.
That's why it feels
again,
like
they're in a fight.
So they're in a fight,
and it's very limiting to be a limited partner, as you know. It's like being a limited shareholder in Disney. If you own 100,000 shares, you feel rich, but you have no power. Nelson Peltz, you get into the billions of dollars, and all of a sudden you can do a proxy fight.
As opposed to being a limited shareholder of Meadowlark, which you get benefits like hanging out with David Sampson as he regales you with tales of his childhood.
On a horse. See you later.
Thank you, Pablo. Things.
Thank you, Pablo.
Thank you both. Sorry for ruining your weekends.
Hey, it's Mike Ryan. I've been watching sports for a long time now. As an adult, a lot has changed. A lot has changed since I turned 21 in the world. But once I was able to enjoy sports with the wonderful taste of Miller Lite, I knew that there was no topping this. I mean, I think back then, instant replay was barely used in other sports outside of football. So when I wanted to complain about referees, I would get all mad, and then I would take a sip of that Miller Lite, cool myself down, take a beat, and realize there are more important things, like the great taste of Miller Lite. Less filling and only 96 calories, the original light beer since 1975. You remember all those old John Madden ads? I still view them on YouTube occasionally. You don't have to choose what's best. Miller Lite has great taste and is less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.